Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Yeah, so for the last couple hours it's been raining, and raining quite hard, and I was imagining giving the Dhamma talk with the rain in the background, and was thinking of doing some readings from the Dhammapada, and I was thinking, oh, how lovely that'll be, kind of sort of cold evening with the rain, sort of being read to, kind of like being put to bed at night with your parents reading you a book, and like, but now it's not raining, so ruined that. But yeah, this afternoon I've been preparing a couple of weeks away. I think it is. The Upasaka day is going to be on. It's the devotional session, and we're trying to, you know, thinking about it in terms of not just sort of talking about like the painting that I'm doing, but we came up with a theme of it. It's titled, I think, The Art of Being Human. And so it's like trying to figure out, you know, it's like having devotional aspects of practice and how that can affect our living and you know, hopefully inspire and lead to deeper understanding, deeper practices. And, you know, one aspect of that is just all the things that we do in the monastery, all the devotion we spend to details. It's like, whenever I'm like showing friends or family, or when other monastics from different traditions come and stay here, like, you know, one of the first things that almost everybody mentions is like how clean the monastery is. You know, the devotion that we spend to keeping things in order. You know, things can always be cleaner and neater, but we do have a pretty high standard from in the world. And so, you know, just thinking of the care and devotion we spend to, you know, making our robes and, you know, doing them as well as we can. And you know, that is kind of it's a craft, but it's also an art. And even just thinking about it in terms of like darning socks and you know, caring for things, that can, you know, it can be quite a beautiful expression of just being, paying attention to details and paying attention to people's generosity by repairing things, but just not just, you know, throwing a patch on it, but doing it beautifully. And I got a lesson really clearly on this when I was first here. I remember there was a nun living here for a short while from Korea, I think her name was Chung Kong. There's the tent site where we have Jay's ashes. We used to call it Chung Kong's tent site. But we were making some. I think the first year we were here, where the flies sort of inundated in the summertime, and we had some mosquito netting. So I just went to a sewing machine and sewed up real quickly two or three kind of like almost like butterfly kind of nets that we use to capture flies, so we don't swat them and kill them, but take them outside and release them. And then she came back about a half hour later after I had sewn two or three up, and she brought one in to use, and it was immaculate. It was a piece of artwork, her mosquito netting. And it was like, I was looking at it later, and it was like, yeah, when she went, she hand sewed it. I just did it on the sewing machine, just, you know, really quickly, and mine was functional and worked. But I was looking at hers, and it was almost like she was like every other hole in the mosquito netting she went through with the thread, you know, and it was just immaculate. It was beautiful, and you could almost not quite, but almost like want to put it on the shrine. It was just, you could see someone puts devotion and love into something as simple as making a flycatcher, and that really struck me. and thinking about, you know, qualities that we can, you know, hopefully that can carry on into, you know, how we live, how we take care of, you know, all the duties that we do, and, you know, eventually, you know, how we treat each other and how we treat ourselves, the same kind of care and attention. And so this afternoon I spent, it was about the entire afternoon sort of looking at various aspects of that kind of devotional practice, and one area I had been wanting to do was gather some information about chanting, and so I spent the afternoon listening to lots of different styles and chanting. And it wasn't until the very end of the day I remembered a conversation I had with Ajahn Sona, sort of talking about just creativity, and there's, you know, very little in the Pali Canon where the Buddha talks about sort of being creative or you know, using art as a like a meditation technique, but Ajahn Sona was pointing out that he does very clearly, you know, like the Dhammapada and the Tarigata and the Tarigata and verses in the Sanyutta Nikaya. There's, you know, long poetic verses that are attributed to the Buddha and to enlightened nuns and the enlightened monks. And so the, you know, Buddha definitely expressed, you know, sort of creativity through his use of words. Not just in the poetry, but just even in just the choices of words, the way he described things. So similes, you know, I guess the Pali Canon is one of the richest sort of sources of similes, you know, of any kind of writings. And so it's there's, you know, lots to draw on from that. But so I was just going through, and I was looking to see if I could, you know, find. I remember there were a couple places where there was maybe some chanting like that. You know, just going through in our computer, the Sota, it was called Sotagiri, and I saw something in there. It said Dhammapada chanting in Pali. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. It was just like literally like 5-10 minutes before evening tea, and started playing it, and I was like, wow, this is really beautiful. I'm pretty sure what it is it, there wasn't any marking on it what it was, and I asked a few people, no one, several people said they listened to it, but they didn't know where it came from, but pretty clear. I'll play one, I think I'm going to play three of them, I think it's probably at Bhavana Society in West Virginia, because I hear, it sounds like Bhante Gunaratana, it sounds like a younger monk, probably a he's definitely another Sri Lankan monk. Must have been visiting and must have been a skilled chanter, so they had him chant the entire Dhammapada. And then the chanter states the title in Pali, and then Bhante, you'll hear, says it in English, and then the chanter chants it. In Sri Lanka, it's very common. I've heard. I was thinking of some talks of Bhikkhu Bodhi, who I've heard him several times give talks where he'll chant a few lines of either Pali, it could even be suttas or the Dhammapada, but he'll chant a few verses and in the very lyrical style of chanting that they do, and then he'll either, you know, give a translation of that. And then if he feels it's appropriate, we'll give a commentary, give some explanation of that, give the significance of it, and then chant a few more lines, and just keeps going back and forth like that. And I guess that's a very common teaching style in Sri Lanka. They do that with, say, the Dhammapada and also the commentaries. I was talking to some monks when I was in England, and that I asked them, like, how they give Dhamma talks, and that's what they said they do. As part of their training for most monasteries, they memorize most of these kind of suttas. And even when I was living in Sri Lanka or in New Zealand, there was a Dhamma school for kids in Auckland, and Benita was the woman who was running it, and they'd always have some sort of, like, you know, Sunday school program, and then once a year the kids would sort of perform for their parents, and I think most of them probably did. You know, by the time they're like 10 years old, I think they had the entire Dhammapada memorized. You know, just by the time they even enter like elementary school, they've already got it completely memorized. And like when we'd go in once a month to just do a meal offering in Auckland, and when we would do they want us to do about 20 minutes of paritta chanting, and you know, the adults and everybody there knew all of the paritta chanting, and would just join in right with us. So there's a big emphasis on, you know, sort of memorizing these, and then you know, using that as a way of giving Dhamma reflections. So just before, just after tea time, I wanted to read up a little bit of, what I'll do is play three of them. They're short, and then I'll read from a translation. And I've always liked Ajahn Jeff Tenisaro Bhikkhu's translations of it from the Dhammapada. And so I was just reading his introduction to it, and he made a couple of interesting points in the introduction that I thought were worth mentioning. One is he's sort of talking about, you know, this isn't just sort of a flowery sort of, you know, expression of the Dhamma, but it really is intended for teaching. And I'm going to read one paragraph that he says, where he's kind of talking about, you know, it's very highly developed, and there's many different aspects, like developing a plot, or just even in use of language in terms of like poetry, like very specific reason that you use, aspects of language. And what I'm not sure, there's probably different ways of translating it, but he's just sort of mentioning that, you know, like the main sort of purpose of the Dhammapada is to make the Dhamma attractive, you know, is to get people's interest involved in it, and is have some attraction and to pull you in and want you to practice. And so this is from his introduction. I'll just read just the one paragraph from the introduction. It says, to make the wise path attractive, the technique of poetry are used to give savor, or rasa is the Pali word, savor, to the message. Ancient Indian ascetics' treatises devote a great deal of discussion to the notion of savor and how it can be conveyed. The basic theory was this. Artistic composition expresses states of emotions or states of mind called bhava. The standard list of basic emotions include love, delight, humor, grief, anger, energy, fear, disgust, and astonishment. The reader or listener exposed to these presentations of emotions did not participate in them directly. Rather, he or she savored them as an ascetic experience at one removed from the emotion. Thus, the savor or grief is not grief, but compassion. The savor of love is not love, but the experience of sensitivity. The savor of astonishment is a sense of the marvelous. The proof of the indirectness of aesthetic experience was that some of the basic emotions were decidedly unpleasant, while the savor of the emotion was to be enjoyed. And so I think that's a kind of an interesting thing when you're listening to the either into the Pali or when I'm reading it, you know, that it's just the emotional kind of response just taking joy, not so much even sort of like, you know, judging or, ooh, I wouldn't say it that way, or, you know, judging it, but it's to savor the qualities. You can think of it in different ways as well. And one thing also Ajahn Jeff points out is that the plot, so like, you know, each one will, you know, the entire Dhammapada has a sort of a flavor to it, what it's trying to convey. But then each sort of stanza or sort of, you know, line, there's 26 different stories in there. So each one will have its own plot, its own, you know, way it's talking about something. Like there's one called the fool, and there's one called the arhant, and so there are different flavors to them. Yeah, but in each one of those, there's, you know, so there's the plot, but then most of them have a subplot as well. So it's like there's a kind of this tension, you know, sort of like the hero sort of, you know, trying to accomplish something, and then there's somebody who's either, you know, doesn't have that quality and who's, you know, inspired by usually the Buddha or somebody who has developed those qualities. And he says oftentimes there can be this sort of play back and forth where, you know, it's like the person who doesn't have it sort of recognizes the quality, and someone who does is inspired by that and then helps that the person who does have that quality, and then the person who has the quality, because they're getting supported and because they have this sort of you know, devotion to the practice and the appreciation of the support that they're receiving, they actually sort of, you know, triumph or, you know, come to complete fruition in their practice. And then, of course, as a result of that, then the person who's helped them then often will go deeper in their practice and or get teachings from the person that they've helped. So there's this always this kind of play of going back and forth. And I'd never really paid attention to that or noticed that. But I was like, well, that's a really quite a lovely quality. You can see how, you know, art can kind of, you know, teach in that way. So I thought what I would do is, now that it's raining, maybe it's a good time to do some reading of poetry. But I thought what I'd do is play the Pali. Say most of them are like 3 to 5 minutes long. Maybe I'll leave just a short pause, and then I'll slowly read the translation. And then I'll just leave, let there be a silence after that. Maybe just use this as a period of meditation. And when I think it's appropriate, I'll warn you, and I'll play the next one. And I just picked these completely at random, and just opened up the book and was reading them and listening to the Pali. And I thought it was interesting. The very first one that I picked is the last Dhamma talk that Ajahn Pasno gave. He was talking about the conversation he had with my brother and how the Fletcher, you know, sort of directs the water, and the carpenter shapes the wood, but the wise trains themselves. And this is where that the first one I picked up is exactly where that came from. So let's see if this works.
Pandita Vaggu, the wise man. Nidhenanva pavantaraṁ yam passe vajya dasinam nigaya vadin medhavin tadisam panditam bhaje tadisam bhaje manas seyo tin papiyo ovadeyanu saseya asambhacha nivaraye satang hi sopiyo hoti asatang hoti appiyo nabaje papake mitte nabaje puri sadhami bhajet mitte kalyani bhajet puri suttami dhamma piti sukhan seti vipasannena chetasa ariyappavedite dhamme sadaramati panditu udakanhi nayanti nittika usukara namayanti tejanam darun namayanti tachaka attanandamayanti pandita selo yatha eka ganu vatena nasamirati evan nindapasansasu nasaminjanti pandita yata pirahado gambhiro vipasannu anavilu evan dhammani suttvana vipasidanti pandita sabbatve sampurisa ca janti na kama kamalapayanti santu sukhena putta athava dukhena uccavacam pandita dassayanti na atta hetu na parassa hetu na putta micchena dananna rattan naicchaya dhammena samiddhi mattenu sasilava panyava dhammiko siya appakate manussesu ye jana paragaminu අතායන් ඉතරා පජාතිර මීවානුදාවති ඒචකෝ සම්මදක්කාතේ ධම්මේ ධම්මානුවත්තිනු තේජනාපාරමෙත් සන්ති මච්චු දෙයියන් සුදුත්තරං කන්නන් ධම්මං විප්පහාය සුක්ඛම් භාවේත පණ්ඩිතු ඕකා අනෝකං ආගම්ම විවේකේ යත් දුරමං තත්‍රාභිරති මිච්ඡේය හිත්වා කාමී අකිංචනු පරියෝදපේය අත්තානං චිත්තක්ලේසේහි පණ්ඩිතු යේසම් සම්බෝධියංගේසු සම්මා චිත්තං සුභාවිතං ආදාන පටිනිස්සග්ගේ අනුපාදාය යේ රතා කීනාසවාජුති මන්තෝ තේ ලෝකේ පරිනිබ්බුතා.
The wise regard him as one who points out treasure, the wise one who, seeing your faults, rebukes you. Stay with this sort of sage. For one who stays with a sage of this sort, things get better, not worse. Let him admonish, instruct. Deflect you away from your poor manners. To the good, he's enduring. To the bad, he's not. Don't associate with bad friends. Don't associate with the low. Associate with admirable friends. Associate with the best. Drinking the Dhamma, refreshed by the Dhamma, one sleeps at ease, with clear awareness and calm. In the Dhamma revealed by the noble ones, the wise person always delights. Irrigators guide the water. Fletchers shape the arrow shaft. Carpenters shape the wood. The wise control themselves. As a single slab of rock won't budge in the wind, so the wise are not moved by praise, by blame. Like a deep lake, clear, unruffled, and calm, so the wise become clear, calm, on hearing words of the Dhamma. Everywhere, truly, those of integrity stand apart. They, the good, don't chatter in hopes of savor or gains. When touched, now by pleasure, now pain, the wise give no sign of high or low. One who wouldn't, not for the sake of one's own, nor that of another, hanker for wealth, a son, a kingdom, his own fulfillment. By righteous means, he is righteous, rich in virtue, discernment. Few are the people who reach the far shore. These others simply scurry along this shore. But those who practice the Dhamma in line with the well-taught Dhamma will cross over the realm of death, so hard to transcend. Forsaking dark practices, the wise person should develop the bright. Having gone from home to no home, in seclusion, so hard to enjoy, there he should wish for delight, discarding sensuality, he who has nothing. He should cleanse himself, wise, of what defiles the mind. Whose minds are well developed in the factors of self-awakening, who delight in non-clinging, relinquishing grasping, resplendent, their affluence ended, they in the world are unbound. So the next Dhammapada is called Thousands, number 8. The first one was number 6.
Sahasavaggu,
the thousands.
Sahasamapi cevacha anat pad sanghita ekang at padan seyo yan sutva upasamati sahasamapi ce gata anat pad sanghita ekaṁ gātā padaṁ seyyo yaṁ sutvā upasammati yocha gātā sataṁ bhāse anatta pada saṅhitā ekaṁ dhamma padaṁ seyyo yaṁ sutvā upasammati yo sahasaṁ sahasena saṅgāmi mānuse jini ekañca jaya mattānaṁ save saṅgāma juttamu attāhave jitāṁ seyo yācāyaṁ itarāpajā attadantas posas nicchan sanyat charinu neva devo na gandabbo na maro saha brahmuna jitang apajitang kaira tatarupas jantunu māse māse sahasena yo yajet satan samang ekañca bhāvitantānaṁ muhuttamapi pūjaye sāeva pūjanā seyyo yañce vas satan hutaṁ yoce vasa satan jantu vaggim paricare vani ekañca bhavitantānaṁ muhuttamapi pūjaye sāeva pūjanā seyyo yañce vasa satan hutaṁ yaṁ kiñca yittaṁ va hutaṁ va lōke saṁ vacchiraṁ yajeta puñña pekho sabbaṁ pitanna catu bhāga mīti abhivādana ucchugate suseyo abhivādana sīlissa nicchaṁ uddhāpacāyinu cattaro dhamma vandanti ayu vannu sukhaṁ balaṁ yoce vasa satan jīve dussīlo vasa mahitu ekā hañjīvitaṁ seyyo sīlavantassa jāyinu Yo ce vas satan jive dupanyo asma hitu. Eka hanjivitan seyo panyavantas jainu. Yo ce vas satan jive kusitu hina viriyu. Eka hanjivitan seyo viriya marabhato dalhaṁ. Yo ce vas satan jive apasaṁ udayabhayaṁ. Eka hanjivitan seyo pasato udayabhayaṁ. Yo ce vas satan jive apasaṁ amataṁ padaṁ. Eka hanjivitan seyo pasato amataṁ padaṁ. Yo ce vas satan jive apasaṁ dhamma muttamaṁ. Ekahaṁ jivitaṁ seyo pasato dhamma muttamaṁ.
Thousands. Better than if there were thousands of meaningless words is one meaningful word. That on hearing brings peace. Better than if there were thousands of meaningless verses is one meaningful verse. That on hearing brings peace. And better than chanting hundreds of meaningless verses is one Dhamma saying that on hearing brings peace. Greater in battle than the man who would conquer 1,000,000 men is he who would conquer just one, himself. Better to conquer yourself than others. When you've trained yourself, living in constraint, self-controlled, neither a deva nor a gandhava nor a mara banded with brahmas could turn that triumph into a defeat. You could, mouth by mouth, month by month, at a cost of thousands, conduct sacrifices 100 times, or pay a single moment's homage to one person, self-cultivated, better than 100 years of sacrifices would that act of homage be. You could, for 100 years live in a forest, tending a fire, or pay a single moment's homage to one person, self-cultivated. Better than 100 years of sacrifices would that act of homage be. Everything offered or sacrificed in the world for an entire year by one seeking merit doesn't come to a fourth. Better to pay respect to those who've gone the straight way. If you're respectful by habit, constantly honoring the worthy, 4 things increase: long life, beauty, happiness, strength. Better than 100 years lived without virtue, uncentered, is 1 day lived by a virtuous person absorbed in jhana. And better than 100 years live undiscerning, uncentered, is 1 day lived by a person discerning, absorbed in jhana. And better than 100 years lived apathetic and unenergetic is 1 day lived energetic and firm. And better than 100 years lived without seeing, arising and passing away, is 1 day lived seeing, rising and a passing away. And better than 100 years lived without seeing the deathless state is 1 day lived seeing the deathless state. And better than 100 years lived without seeing the ultimate Dhamma is 1 day live seeing the ultimate Dhamma. Okay, and the last one is called happy or happiness. I believe it's number 15. or Sukhavaga.
Sukhavagu, happiness.
Susukam vata jivam verini suva verinu verini su manusse su viharam averinu Susukam vata jivam ature su anatura Aturesu manussesu viharam anatura Susukam vata jivam ussukesu anussuka Ussukesu manussesu viharam anussuka Susukam vata jivam yesang no natti kinchanam Piti bhakka bhavissam deva abhasrayata Jayam veram pasavati dukkhan seti parajitu Upasanto sukhan seti hitva jaya parajayam Natti raga samo agge natti dosa samo kali Natti khanda disa dukkha natti santi parang sukhan Jigaccha parama roga sankhara parama dukkha Etan yatva yata bhutam nibbanam paramam sukham Arogya parama labha santutti paramam dhanam Vissasa parama jnati nibbanam paramam sukham Pavivekha rasam pitva rasam upasamassaca Niddaro hoti nippapo dhamma piti rasam pibam Sahu dassana mariyanam sannivaso sadasukho Adassanena balanam nichyameva sukhi siya Bala sangat charihi dig madhan sochati Dukkho balehi sangvaso amitte niv sabda Dhirocha sukha sangvaso nyati nanv samagmu Dhirancha panyancha bahusutancha dhoraiha silang vatvant mariyam Tantadi sansappurisan sumidam bhajet nakkat patang vachandima
Happy. How very happily we live, free from hostility. Among those who are hostile. Among hostile people, free from hostility, we dwell. How very happily we live, free from misery, among those who are miserable. Among miserable people, free from misery, we dwell. How very happily we live, free from busyness, among those who are busy. Among busy people, free from busyness, we dwell. How very happily we live, we who have nothing. We will feed on rapture like the radiant gods. Winning gives birth to hostility. Losing, one lies down in pain. The calm lie down with ease, having set winning and losing aside. There's no fire like passion. No loss like anger, no pain like the aggregates, no ease other than peace. Hunger, the foremost illness, fabrication, the foremost pain, for one knowing this truth as it actually is, unbinding is the foremost ease. Freedom from illness, the foremost good fortune. Contentment, the foremost wealth. Trust, the foremost kinship. Unbinding, the foremost ease. Drinking the nourishment, the flavor of seclusion and calm, one is freed from evil, devoid of distress. Refreshed with the nourishment of rapture in the Dhamma, it's good to see noble ones, happy their company always. Through not seeing fools, constantly, constantly, one would be happy. For, living with a fool, one grieves a long time. Painful is communion with fools, as with an enemy, always. Happy is communion with the enlightened, as with a gathering of kin. So, the enlightened man, discerning, learned, enduring, dutiful, noble, intelligent, a man of integrity follows him, one of this sort, as the moon the path of the zodiac stars. So I'll just let the words of the Buddha be the conclusion of the talk.
Sadhu, sadhu.